Welcome to Podcast Insider. Of course, my name is Todd Cochran. I'm the founder of Blueberry, and I got on the phone, or not phone, but Skype. I got Mike on. Mike, how you doing?
Doing good. Everything is clipping right along here toward the end of the year.
And we got snow on the ground here in Columbus today, which is unusual. They don't normally carry a lot of snow here. How about you? Got a little snow on the ground too, don't you?
Yeah, a little bit. Nothing to write home about.
But anyway, want to welcome everyone to Podcast Insiders. We're fast approaching Christmas, and hey, we've got a special Christmas edition coming next week. I think you're going to love it. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but it is going to be. I think you'll have a lot of fun, and there'll be some ideas there for you on the. Some podcasts to listen to on the next episode, but it'll be a special edition next week on, I don't know, when are we putting it out? Are we putting it out Christmas Eve or?
I think we're putting it out on normal schedule on the 26th.
So oh, okay.
It'll be the day after, which would be our normal published date, but we might kick it out a little early.
So anyway, we'll have that there for you. But today we got a little news, some best practices, stuff going on in here at Blueberry, interview with Charles McFall. And his podcast, that, and then we got some support topics. So, Mike, Apple has joined the smart home device party, and now you have Apple Podcasts now available on Alexa.
Yeah, it's actually kind of nice. I was playing with it the other day. You get on your Alexa app on your phone or whatever, and you sign into your Apple account, and then after that, whenever you ask it to play a podcast, it plays it through Apple Podcasts instead of TuneIn, which is the default. Now, this only works in the U.S. currently. But
so there's three defaults, though, right? There's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or TuneIn, I would assume. Is that the three defaults?
Yeah. You can also do that through Spotify. They both announced right about the same time. So I think it was one of those things where they did it and then all the other one had to do it.
Yeah, I think, you know, what happened there was that probably Amazon said, hey, we're going to let you both do this and you both can announce it. And I think the announcement actually came the same day. But yeah. Spotify also announced they're available on Alexa as well. So and those of you that are listening to this show through a smart home device, we've just triggered your device five times, so we apologize. But, yes, you can they've got some keywords that you specifically have to say to play with either Apple Podcast or with Spotify, and hopefully it finds the show. I haven't experimented with it, you know, because I've always, you know, it's very simple. It's, you know, to get a smart home device to listen to a show, you do the keyword to get the device's attention, and this works almost on any device.
All of them, yeah.
You can say, play the podcast, and then the show name. You have to say the show name very distinct, and it'll play the latest episode. So on the Apple Podcast experience, Mike, did it play the last episode or the newest episode?
Yeah, if you don't specify, it plays the newest episode. And what's kind of nice about it, if you use Apple Podcasts on your phone or your iPad or on your computer now, say you're listening to this show and you pause it and then you go jump in your car and play it on your phone, it'll take off wherever you left off on your smart home device or vice versa. So it's kind of synced across all the devices and it works pretty slick.
Including the Apple Podcast app?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, on the phone, the iPad, the computer, if you're on a Mac that has the new OS on it, or on your Alexa device, or even on your Apple Home device, whatever that speaker's called.
Very interesting.
So it's a really, you know, slick implementation of it. I haven't played with the Spotify version of that, but I'm hoping that they're probably just about as slick.
Right. And there was also an announcement that Zach Cann is taking the position to be the head podcast PR at Apple. He used to be from Vox Media. He was one of their marketers over there.
Right.
So,
yeah, the speculation is that Apple's going to get into some exclusive content, you know, at Apple Podcasts or some, you know, or making their own podcast, whether it'll be exclusive to Apple Podcasts or not, who knows, but they're getting into the production side. They did it with the TV Plus app, you know, now they've got some of their own shows. So, like I said, speculation is with the Vox Media guy coming in as their head of PR that may be what they're going to be doing.
Yeah, awesome. So let's talk about a few predictions for 2020. Mike, have you got one?
I've got a couple. I think things are going to continue along, the same lines. Apple's going to, going to have a certain market share. It's going to hover around 50%. I don't think that's going to change too much. Spotify is going to gain, and others are going to gain a little bit. But the whole industry, I think, is gaining, and it's still gaining listenership. And, everybody says that every year. Oh, yeah, we're gaining listeners. But you know what? Every year we have. It's been a slow, nice climb. And I think that's just going to continue in 2020.
My prediction is that Facebook is going to do something. I've heard some rumblings, nothing concrete, but whispers and rumors that Facebook is going to do something to more broadly support podcasting. So, that'll be, if that actually happens, people are going to flip their wigs and that'll be the talk of the year. But we'll see if that actually happens or not.
Yeah, who knows? They seem to be, one of the last holdouts where it's kind of difficult to, do anything with podcasting, on the platform other than, throw a link to your post, which is what we recommend anyway. But, maybe they'll have a podcast player that you can use on there, or maybe they're going to do something more directly.
Now, we'll see, but I guess that's probably my main prediction for 2020. And of course, I think we're going to continue to see, people still trying to do some innovative stuff. And I am a little bit concerned about the continued commercialization of the podcast space. And I think that, we here at Blueberry Podcasting know where our bread is buttered, and we'll be definitely making sure that we watch out for the independent content creators and going to battle for them when we need to, if we need to. But, as long as RSS remains open, I think we're going to be... going to be fine. They really can't gatekeeper us into silos without our own, without us allowing to happen ourselves.
I saw a thing somewhere that the vast majority of podcasts out there are non-commercial, or they're just hobby, or they're not trying to make any money. So much focus is on the, advertising and making money and monetizing and all that. But, a lot of people just do it because they love it and they love the topic they're talking about. I do that. The podcasts right. that I do are because I love the topic. It's not, it's not a money-making venture, as far as my personal podcasts. They're just because I like to flip the mic on and talk to people.
True. Well, let's talk about some best practices here, and I've got one for you today, and it's about interviewing. And I really learned this from I was at the Mid-Atlantic Podcast Conference put on by Joe Pardo, and one of the speakers there was talking about the amount of research he does on people he's going to interview, and I was blown away. He says, I spent 8 to 16 hours doing research on every guest that I have on. And I'm like, well, what do you do for those 8 to 16 hours? And because most of us really don't have that much time. But he says, I listened to every interview they've been on in the last, at least like last year. And he says, I keep notes. And sometimes he says podcasters or whoever's doing the interviewing will glaze over a topic. They will have, there'll be a nugget that will have been dropped and it could have been explored deeper. And the interviewer did not take the advantage and ask questions about maybe that nugget that was talked about. So when he's actually doing research on his interviewees, he tries to find those nuggets that don't get answered in other interviews so that when he gets them on or gets the person he's going to interview on and they go through his normal sequence of the interview, he then runs into or he will ask the question from another show that didn't get answered. And oftentimes the guests will be pretty blown away because they will have known that he spent the time to really kind of dig and find this nugget of information. He says he doesn't always get a bombshell question, but he often not gets enough sub questions to be able to ask that the guest really then throughout the interview really gets an understanding that, hey, this interviewer really knows his stuff about me, and they get deeper into the topic and it makes for better interviews. So that was just one nugget that I heard about, what to do when you're getting ready to interview someone. I'll be the first to admit, I do very, very little prep when I talk to podcasters. I, I'll go look at their website, look at their show, try to get an idea how long they've been podcasting. I don't get a lot of nuggets. And I allow them to kind of drive the narrative. But it is an interesting concept if you're going out and interviewing people for your show and you want to make yourself a better interviewer, is just to do that pre-homework to be ready for to do that interview.
Right. I do a little bit of that when I do an interview, but the main thing I do, I don't have written questions. You know, I have kind of the standard things I ask a podcaster, you know, when I do interviews for this show and others. But what I like to do is I like to really listen to the answers, because if you're not listening to the answers and you're thinking about the next question, if you have them written down, you're going to miss something that you might want to follow up on. And, you know, so many interviewers, you'll see, you know, well, what do you think of X? And then they tell, you know, they say whatever it is, and then they go on to the next question and don't follow up on it. And,
right,
you know,
right.
And the other thing I notice a lot of interviewers do is they inject themselves into the interview a lot. And really your job is to get the guest started and then just let them go.
That was his point. He basically finds those opportunities where a follow-up question should have been made. And I'm the same way too. I have three topics I want to cover during an interview, but I don't really have an agenda on how to get from A, B to C. You know, I don't have a plan. And sometimes the conversation leads a different path and we may not get item B talked about. So I think it's important too is, you know, kind of have a plan in your head, but I think, yes, these written questions lead to problems. And actually, in my opinion, Mike, they lead to very boring, dry shows that are really, people kind of real quickly get, you know, the yawn factor on them. So I think that it's good to do it your model, but at least have some knowledge about that person to be able to ask those, you know, those kind of those questions that weren't asked before.
Right. And the one last thing I'd say about interviewing is, you know, you don't have to do an interview to do a podcast. So many people start podcasts and, you know, they think that they have to interview people, and you know, you don't have to, it's cool to do it, but know that you can podcast solo, or, you know, with Todd and I, we're doing this, or, you know, Mackenzie and I, whoever's doing this show, it's just the two of us. We're not really interviewing. We're just co-hosting.
Yeah, and my tech show I do solo. I've done solo for 15 years, so I can't imagine having a co-host or having interviews. It just wouldn't fit with the flow. Well, let's move on here. We'll talk a little bit about what's going on here at Blueberry. And boy, if you're an affiliate, merry, 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 merry Christmas. I was reviewing the spreadsheet yesterday, and we have a record number of affiliates who are getting five-digit end-of-year annual bonuses, and a record number of affiliates that are getting four-digit bonuses, and then a trickle down all the way from there. And very, very happy. And Mackenzie was going to get the payments out yesterday, but I think they're going out today. So some of you should see that in PayPal or however your payment method is. But if you are not an affiliate, you're leaving cash on the table. It's time to consider becoming a Blueberry affiliate.
Yeah, we got the best affiliate program in the business, I think. You get paid commission on, you know, conversions. You know, when they use your promo code, they pay the bill a couple times, you get whatever they signed up for as your initial commission, and then it accumulates through the year and through the years. So if you have a person that's on your affiliate code that's been with us for 2 or 3 years, you're still getting paid at the end of each year. And that really accumulates. No other program out there is like this.
And to give an annual bonus for a customer you brought to us 5 years ago. And we're getting people that are getting bonus checks based on business they brought us 5 years ago. And it's a cumulative volume, and we pay either 5 or 7% depending on where you are in the stack. So I'm pretty jazzed. The people that have figured out our affiliate program and understand the value of it, they understand that, yeah, it's that great initial chunk of cash they get each quarter, or however, yeah, I think we pay each quarter, is great. But boy, oh boy, that Christmas bonus oh, wow. And, you know, and I asked Barry, I said, we got enough money in PayPal to pay that? And we looked in PayPal, and we'd actually not done any transfers in a while. So we were, so we're good to pay the bill, but it's a significant number. It is really an incredible, I look at it, I'm like, wow, you know, and, but spread that across our affiliates, and yeah, some people are going to have some very, very Merry Christmas. So congratulations. And if you're an affiliate already, just get out there and start using your promo code, promoting it in your show, talk about the service, how you love Blueberry Podcasting, what you're getting out of it, why their listeners should be a podcaster. And I think that, even in my show, I've spawned, you know, dozens of shows over the years for people that listen to me that say, wow, I could do this too. And some of them say, I can do it better. And I hope they do go out and start a podcast. So, you know, promote starting a show in your podcast to your audience and promote Blueberry Podcasting with your affiliate promo code.
Definitely is an interesting program. And yeah, we interviewed Colin Gray on the blog. He's one of our affiliates. And anyway, it's an interesting read over there at PowerPressPodcast.com, where our blog is currently.
I won't say where Colin ranked, but Colin was definitely in our top 10. And so if you want to learn more about podcasting and what, I mean, affiliate marketing and what he's done, definitely we'll have the link to that particular interview in the show notes. Maybe we should get him on here and talk to him a little bit. But
yeah, we haven't interviewed him on the show yet.
Yeah, so maybe we can get him slid in here in one of the future shows. All right, so up today is an interview I did with Charles McFall, and he does a bear crawling podcast. Charles has been in this space a long, long time.
He used to work for us a little bit, too.
Yeah, and he doesn't get as much credit as he deserves in the space. He's done very, very well for himself. He runs an event at DragonCon. He runs the digital podcasting track at DragonCon. So I think we talked a little bit about that during the interview. But without further ado, here's Charles McFall. Hey everyone, I want to welcome Charles McFall to Podcast Insider. How are you doing, Charles?
I'm good. I'm excited to be talking with you today.
Yeah, nice to chat with you. Last time I saw you was at DragonCon. So Yeah, that was quite the event. But for those that don't know you, why don't you give everyone a little introduction?
I am the Rock Gunner Podcasting, Charles McFall. I've been podcasting since 2004 and not successfully, mind you, just staying at it.
Well, anyone that's been whacking away at it since 2004 has been has had a chance to be successful and had even allowed to have shows pod fade, I think, right?
Yeah, I don't think I've had anybody say. I think I've retired them intentionally to move on to other things. And I've been fortunate that I always say I came up with some of the greats. You know, I met you, Todd, really early on, and Brian Ibbett and Dave Jackson. And when we're all just trying to do this crazy new thing that nobody knew what we're talking about. And I like to say I'm the biggest kept secret in podcasting because I still haven't broken through where people know who I am like you guys have, which is awesome.
Well, you know, let's go back to that time. You know, what excited you about doing a show? Now, and, you know, back in 04, it was all, I think for at least for me, I was like, wow, I don't have to ask permission for anybody to do anything.
Yes.
What was your genesis?
I was wanting to do music. I always wanted to move people with my voice. I just was drawn to that. And I'm a big talker, always have been. Got me in tons of trouble at school, and I discovered my local radio station did this thing. They called it a podcast, which I think even by today's standards, it barely qualified because it was just some of the worst clips, not their best clips of the morning. And it's like a morning zoo crew drive time show, and it's their worst clips, but you could go to their site and listen on their site to MP3s, and they called it a podcast. I'm like, what is this? And I Googled podcast, and Podcast Alley came up. And
Chris McIntyre.
Yeah. And at the time, I mean, you some categories didn't even have top 50, right? They had spaces for it, but there just weren't that many. I think there's, it was still 400 or so shows listed overall, but it was triple digits, but not much. And I found, of course, as everybody did, Coverville, found Musicians Cooler.
Right.
Musicians Cooler, yeah. I found your show and just started looking. Of course, everybody found Adam Curry's. What did he call it then? It was Daily Download.
And Daily Source Code at that time.
Daily Source Code. Yeah. That was it. Yeah.
Yeah. The Daily Download was another show that was about bowel movements. So
did not listen to that. But
no, me neither.
What got me hooked was in the comedy section, there was a thing that said two guys, one brain. And I clicked on it. It says two jailers from Portland talk about their job. And I was a paramedic at the time, and I was like, well, that's interesting, and let me check out that. And then I think I got into their episodes when they were 15 episodes in and didn't know it because they weren't numbering it because they were smart. They were just doing shows. And they sounded so professional. And so when I wrote into them and they read what I wrote, I'm going, oh, my God, you know, they read what I wrote, and I'm able to help co-create. And didn't know that I was, like, one of the first people that ever wrote into their show, and they were just flipping out too. And just loved what they were doing and started producing segments and doing shows and just got that bug that we get and just started doing my own thing after that.
You know, I think back to that time, and if, you know, you think about Chris McIntyre, Chris was a technical writer, or basically a technical editor for my book on podcasting. And
oh, really?
Yeah, Chris and I have remained friends, and, you know, it kind of reminds me, I feel guilty. I haven't talked to Chris in a couple of years, but you know, Chris went over to Podshow and was working directly for them for a while. And I often think back that if Chris had taken a little different path with what he was doing with Podcast Alley, he could have ended up being huge as a podcast host, yeah, or something to that effect. But, you know, it's amazing how, you know, you turn right or you turn left and how life leads you in different directions. But, now, Chris was a great guy. I've got a lot of gratitude to Chris over the years, but one of those unsung heroes that put a directory together in early days.
Yeah. I think without it, cause it took me actually a little while. I don't think I got in before Podcast Pickle. It just took me a while to find Podcast Pickle.
Yeah.
And Gary over there. But if it weren't for that directory, and actually I just looked it up, it's still live technically. It says Free the Airwaves, and there's some podcast news and some different things on the site. Yeah, it's got Blueberry News and Geek Central News, and
I think he's got it set up as like a syndication site or now or something.
Kinda, yeah. But you're not going to find the shows like you used to. But if it hadn't have been for him collecting just links to the people's websites so you could go find them, I don't know if I'd have taken the podcast path. But to instantly find not just that people were out there doing this, but that I could connect with them, learn from them, just learn no fear. You said there's no permission, which I loved. I absolutely loved just being able to do whatever I wanted and nobody could tell me no. But every time I went, hey, I like this Brian Imbert guy, I'm going to write to him. Hey, I like one of the biggest names I got early on was Dan Carlin, because other people were like, hey, have you heard this Hardcore History show? I'm like, hey, you like him? I'll just invite him on my show without ever listening to his stuff. And he came on and we talked about his histories and stuff. And everyone like, holy crap, you got Dan Carlin. I'm like, is that a thing? Okay. Because he was a cool guy and he would talk to you. And that's how I approached everything was, will you talk to me?
Right.
And now, you know, I turn around the first New Media Expo I went to, I don't know, 2010. I don't remember when it was. And I had a buddy of mine who is a fanboy and listens to all of you guys. And I run into the first person I ran into was Daniel J. Lewis. Sorry. And we'd known each other forever. He's like, oh, you know him? Like, yeah. And then I saw Dave Jackson. He's like, oh, my God, I was just listening to Dave at the gym. I'm like, that's what podcasting is. I know I like to say we, but I know there's a level of celebrity that comes with once people start listening to your show, but we're still people. And I think that's what I love about podcasting in general. We just are people who love what we do.
And the thing is, we all, you know, kind of in those early years hung out and talked shop and drank beer together. And
yeah.
That's why a lot of people don't get it when they, you know, like when Rob Greenlee and I do a podcast together and they say, you two are competitors. How do you do a show together? They don't understand that we all, just kind of hung out together in those early days. So, you know, for your aspect, I know where your career has taken you with podcasting. It's been pretty amazing, but how many different shows have you done over the years?
So I started off doing Morning Zoo Crew. And it was horrible. And I mean, still some people listened, which is always good. But I made mistakes that let me fail forward. So I tried a few, two shows. The first one was called Pulling My Pod, and it was very much a masturbation joke. Didn't get very many listeners, as you would imagine. And then the next one was what I believe was a whole left turn, talking, challenging stereotypes and talking with somebody who's opposite of me in life. And we were just discussing topics. And that did okay, but then I really jumped off with Bear Crawling. And that's when I think that's when any true success came with, for any podcast, is when you just talk about what you know. And in my case, it's me and my life. And mm-hmm. so I statistically couldn't be alone. So I started talking about things. And that's when I got my first stranger who I'd never met writing in saying, what you said is exactly what my life's like, even though they're totally different. And so beyond that, let's see. So episodes I counted up one time. I know that's not what you're asking, but one, two. So Bear Crawling was three. The spinoff of that was four. I'd have to say 10-ish different shows. And then one really constant factor has just been me and my attitude in my mouth and how I see the world and do things. But I've always taken a different tactic with each show. I did a motivational show for a while. Then I did a secondary motivational show called Rock Out of Podcasting, where I just tell stories about how I see the world. And then, you know, some are fandom, some are game based.
What is,
and
the,
I'm always,
go ahead. No. So what did, would you, was there a show that stuck for a long time in particular?
Bear Crawling was my first one. It was the first time I was just, screw it, I'm not going to be what I think I should be. I'm just going to throw my crap on the wall and see if anybody cares. Mm-hmm. And did you launch the Podcast Wars? Has always been you, right?
Yeah, it has been. Yep.
Yeah. So that came around, and I actually found out, I cannot remember this guy's name. He was a musician guy. He turned out to be a jackass, so I kind of cut ties with him. But he's like, yeah, look up podcastcirclejerk.com. And I did. And it took me to Podcast Awards. And I truly could not comprehend. I was like, I don't understand the joke. What's, hey, there's awards. How do I get nominated? And the fact that I discovered I had an audience with Bear Crawling, I had an audience that got me nominated multiple times over the years. It meant a lot. It kept me going. And it's just little things like that. And that was my first big successful one. I would count as a success because I could see numbers. And Blueberry came around and we were doing the statistics, right? And I can see people are listening. And then the Podcast Awards, even though I feel like the Susan Lucci of the Podcast Awards, I can usually get nominated. When I try, I just can't win. Maybe I'm more apropos, but I'm the Leonardo DiCaprio because I have a bigger ego than Susan Lucci.
You know, the Podcast Awards have had their own has had its own drama and challenges over the years.
Yeah.
So luckily we've been pretty smooth sailing here for the last two or three years, so it's been it was fun in itself, and it's had its moments, but that's probably a podcast in itself.
Oh, no kidding. that whole path. I watched most of it. I was peripherally involved in some of you being nominated and going to some of the awards and seeing some of the behind the scenes. But, and I've always defended that. I was always, you know, I've had very close ties with Brian Ibbett for a long time. And I know there was some things there that we won't dive into, but,
Brian's a good guy. I like Brian.
He is.
A lot.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. And
for those of you who don't know who Brian is, he's, go to coverville.com is the, his main podcast.
You know what? That brings up a little bit of a pet peeve of mine. I'll finish my thought. But there were people who were like, oh, the Podcast Awards. I think I always at least basically understood what you were intending to do with that. And I've always appreciated the fact that you put it out there so that we could uplift each other, essentially. Right. It's not just a yes, Coverville won the Best Music Award a lot. But honestly, because they were one of the best music shows on the net for a long time.
A long time.
So it wasn't just here, we're going to hand you something. It was very much if you put in some effort. I never, like I said, I never saw the award, but I got to see I got nominated over and over again. And I could bring that to other people. So when people started bitching, I was like, look, don't enter. If that's not what you want to do, then don't enter. There's no reason to try to tear it down. I mean, Ty didn't have to do anything that he's done, so.
Yeah, and if they knew the amount of money I spent on it over the years when it was not financially viable, they wouldn't have been complaining, but it is what it is.
Well, that's not true, Todd. People complain. That's what they do.
Yeah, that's right.
How about my pet peeve? I love. So I did. I started in the Wild West of podcasting, and early on with bear crawling, I knew this is what I was going to do. When somebody goes, "What is this?" I don't know, but I can just tell you. I just have this vague vision of I'm going to be in front of people, and I'm like talking. And this is what I'm going to do with the rest of my life, and it's going to pay my bills. It's still not quite to the pay my bills part, but I'm way closer than I was 10 years ago. But when somebody now today, it's so easy to get in there, and I love that the celebrities have helped bring attention to it, and you know the whole tide rises all boats thing. But when somebody goes, "Who's Adam Curry? Who's Todd Cochran? Who's Brian Abbott?" That's the one time I get that little chip on my shoulder and that little get off my lawn, like, know your history.
Yeah, I'm not. You know, at this point, I'm not worried about the history. I think what I really want is podcasters to podcast, you know, and if people can podcast and get started and share their voice. And to me, that makes me smile bigger than, you know, because, you know, it's, we there's lots of people out there leading the space now. So I think that, you know, there's, again, like you said, the celebrities and the news and all they've helped us rise all tides, you know, and we all continue to be successful together. You know, I think Charles, you've got a unique experience having been in the space so long and having interactions with audiences. You know, the story about your, you know, one of your listeners writing in saying, "I'm just like you and facing maybe the same challenges," or whatever the details of that email were. What are some other moments that you have that said, "Man, this just has made it worth it"?
I got this random email one day that, I take that back. I logged into my PayPal one day and I had over $100 from Blueberry. I was like, "What?" And I emailed this little guy called Todd Cochran, and you were so nice about it because I was like, "Hey, I think you paid me out and I'm not really in any kind of ad buys. Do I have to give it back?" And you were so patient, like, "Well, here, we got some new ad buys coming up. Yes, you have to give it back. Are you sure?" And I can just hear the,
"Did we
yes,
pay you?
Please did, give
did we,
the money
did
back.
We pay you my mistake?"
Yeah. It's the awesomest mistake of my life, but I was honest about it and I wrote you.
That's funny.
What happened there though is, I don't know if I just didn't know how to, if I wasn't paying, that's the story of my life. I don't always pay enough attention. One way or the other, I was not in the ad buy program when I could have been. And because of that interaction, I got my first honest, after I returned the money, because it wasn't mine, I got my first honest ad buy, and I got like $20. And it's like, holy crap, I earned $20 just sitting in my attic talking to nobody.
Right.
That was amazing. Meeting some real-life listeners who they said, they'd listened to the show for a while, then we had a meetup, and they came to the meetup, and they said, "What you see is what you get." So I'm not a character on the show. I mean, yeah, I might turn my stories up a little bit louder for entertainment value, but my heart comes through. Who I am comes through. Everything comes through. And having that confirmed, because I never wanted to be fake. I never wanted to hide who I was. I just wanted to be accepted for who I am. And then, you know, honestly, you know, people like you and Ibbot who validate what I do, you know, you were at DragonCon this year, and you bringing your uniqueness to it. That was like, you know, I'm doing something here, and somebody I've known and respected for a long time sees it. Now we might not agree on everything, and that's life.
That's right. Yep.
But we make opportunity. And I think what we do agree on, what's great about it is what I've always seen in you is that we make opportunities. You created Blueberry Hosting because you wanted a place that wasn't freaking Bluehost and all this other stuff that I came up through, hand coding RSS feed and fighting with their servers getting infected, and now I can't do a show. And that's where we've been similar, is we always make opportunities. But just having that, one of my proudest moments is Ibbot, when he pulled me up on the stage for when he won for Morning Stream, I think it was. It was one of those that he won for in Vegas. And I did that sign language bit because right after that, we had only been podcasting together for 10 episodes, 12 episodes. Right. We hadn't been together for very long. But we'd hit and just I totally respected him and his sense of humor. And he's like, "That would be funny. Let's do that." That validation of people you've watched and worked in the shadows behind or close to or near, that's been great. One of my best moments was I worked with Jay Soderbergh as friends for a long time. We've never like professionally worked together, but we've been friends and co-collaborated on things. And when he was at Blog Talk Radio, he called me and said, hey, have you ever heard of Jim Brewer? And I'm like, are you stupid? Of course I've heard of Jim Brewer. Yeah, he's one of my favorite comedians. You know, he's done Saturday Night Live in the 90s, and he did I just lost the there's a weed movie he did, I lost the thing, but people know him for that and Goat Boy and different things. And they said, yeah, well, he's looking for somebody to manage his website and help him grow his podcast. And so through that, I got to work with Jim Brewer for a year and a half. And I was like, where else in the world can you say I just randomly met somebody and now get to work with my favorite comedian celebrities? Yeah, podcast.
You know, talking about Jay, it took him so long once he left Blog Talk to find a job. I'm glad he's landed someplace.
Yes.
You know, and I didn't have a spot for him. I was trying to figure out if we could figure out a way to hire him, but I'm glad he's gotten a job, and sounds like he's happy at that new sports network. So
yeah, he's always been very sports centric, and yeah, it unfortunately did take a long time, but I was very happy for him too.
So when it comes to the audience interaction, you sound like you've had a lot, but you know, ultimately, I know that you have really had some great opportunity come your way, and then you're running the podcasting track at Dragon Con. So, you know, it's a big event, and you know, you guys are pulling in some serious numbers in the rooms, people coming in and not only listen to fan shows, but listen to the tracks. You know, how do you feel now that you're the man running the Dragon Con event?
Podcasting. I think the theme of my life is validated. There's a fine line, and you know this more than anybody, I think, Todd. There's a fine line between ego and confidence, mm-hmm. and I blur that line quite often. But I've always felt like I could put on an amazing show and help people. And my path through podcasting has been the flow of water. It's like, where's the opportunity? Where can I help somebody do something? And I ended up at DragonCon for that same reason. Actually, New Media Expo paid for me to go to DragonCon to see what they were missing before they went to Vegas. And I talked them into it. It's one of the things I do. I just talk myself into things. And I reached out to, I'd made friends there, and I reached out to Megan Enloe, who connected me with, I forgot his name now, but he ran the Lumia Expo.
Yeah.
Rick. Yeah. And so he's like, yeah, well, it's $150 at the time. We'll pay for you to go and interview people and tell us what you see. And then I came back from that. It was in 2010, actually, they sent me. So I came back from that, and we had a conference call with some of their marketers and sent them all the audio. And I don't know what they did with it, and it's fine. But I fell in love with DragonCon, what they were doing. And again, just stepped up to Brian Dunaway, was running it, and Nicole Spagnola at the time, and said, well, how can I help? And basically the first year, I just asked a bunch of questions. Second year, I got a panel. Third year, I got like pro status in 3 or 4 panels, and then it just kind of went from there. And Dunaway asked me if I wanted to step up, and well, I was already volunteering. First, he asked me if I wanted to volunteer. I'm like, yeah, anything you can do to make opportunities to help. And being able to step into that role and try, because man, it could have crashed so horribly wrong, and just to try vision. And of course, as you know, with vision, not everything goes according to plan.
Of course. Yeah.
But I have that big 10-year, well, maybe not 10-year, but I have a bigger picture in mind that we're working towards. That as long as people are happy and they show up most of the time, then I'm good. And I think this year was important for that, because I didn't get to see anything, man. I didn't get that validation of, I loved your panel. Will you sign this autograph or take this picture? It was just buzzing room to room. Yeah. But I felt good at the end of it. Felt like everybody else got that validation for the most part, and it was good. Go ahead.
You know, you bring up a point here. You did your time. You put in the work.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I look back at some of the stuff that I did with Annie McCaskey in the early years when we first went to the Consumer Electronics Show. You know, we went there the first year with the microphones in hand. Second year went with cameras. A few years later, we finally figured out we could maybe do a live stream thing. We happened into being able, it was during the Vancouver Olympics, we were able to get on the MSNBC or NBC main stage and do a couple hours of live for a couple of days. And then it was like these little incremental things we did. And then CEA said, by the way, do you want a booth? They put us back in the nosebleed section of South Hall where we could barely be found, but we still did 50 hours live. And and then moved into the – so it's almost – I think a lot of podcasters now want stuff to happen so fast. They don't understand that if you're – you know, you and I were brand new to creating media. I wasn't in broadcast. I was working on airplanes on a flight line, you know, as an electronics technician in the Navy. So, you know, and you were doing your thing. So we weren't broadcasters, and we had to kind of, I don't want to say earn our stripes, but we had to put the time in to kind of figure out what we wanted. And it's the same thing with you. At this point, you're running Dragon Con. You got a vision on where you want that to go, and you're going to tweak it over time, and you're willing to take input, and we talk a little bit about it at the end. So I think, you know, it's really one of those situations where you just have to, it goes back to that discussion. This is a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah. Yeah. And to that point, you know, Blueberry, you're starting off offering was, I mean, I think it just offered statistics and some basic hosting.
Yeah.
And now there's PowerPress. And when I started working with Metron, which is the show that absolutely I've hosted with Blueberry, it's a great project. People should check that out. MetronLive.blueberry.com. They were clients more or less. It's a co-creation thing, but I'm not speaking. I'm only running the audio and the video, and there's a live stream, and that turned into a podcast, all this other stuff, recording. Sure. And they're like, well, how do we host? You're the expert. I'm like, I didn't even think twice. Like, you go to Blueberry, and this is what we need. I know how much we're going to be uploading. This is the level you need. And the tools there have been fantastic. And PowerPress, I don't know if you came up with that vision, but PowerPress has been one of the greatest things that's happened to podcasting in a long time.
You know what it was there was another plugin. I can't even think of the name of it right now. PodPress was the plugin.
Yeah.
And the guy that was maintaining that was getting paid to maintain it. And something happened. I don't know, whoever was paying him decided not to pay him anymore. And it was kind of going into decline. It had not been updated. And I don't know if Angelo forked it or if he completely rewrote the code, but it was really kind of Angelo's baby. He said, let's build this plugin for WordPress. And at the time, we weren't doing hosting. You know, all we were doing at the time was providing statistics and doing advertising deals. So PowerPress came before the hosting piece, you know, and then later on, after we had this, you know, large success with it being used, and we're kind of like, ding, well, we're dummies. Let's add hosting to this. And you know, that kind of started the upswing on the service business. But I think the credit for PowerPress has to go to Angelo for his vision on saying, you know, this PodPress plugin is dying. Let's make our own.
Yeah. I'm a little surprised, but also glad at the same time that you never dove into being an aggregator. The site's an aggregator, right? Not an app.
No, it's not an app. You know, we don't have an app per se. And, you know, people always ask us why we don't have an app. I think you try to do what you do best.
Yeah.
And we may focus on doing an app that provides stats or something like that in the future, but now it's, you know, we don't have an app per se, and I'm going to let people that want to code apps do that.
And I honestly don't know if you've gotten to talk about this, but I'm actually very curious. Why did you go from being that Navy technician, and what made you not only want to do a show, but from the get-go, from what I always remember, Todd Cochran, is you're like, I'm going to make this company, and I'm going to build Blueberry and Raw Voice, and what drove you to that?
Well, you know, it basically was circumstance. And also my wife saying, you've got 2 years to figure out how to make money. Well, I figured out how to make money with the show in about 9 months. I was able to get a sponsor and lock that in. But really what ended up happening was after I got the sponsorship with GoDaddy, the GoDaddy rep said, do you know any other shows that would like to do advertising? And a little light bulb went off in my head. And on my next podcast, I said, I'm looking for a lawyer. I'm looking for a biz dev, looking for a graphics guy and a software developer. So my raw voice was born from listeners of my show. And we had a conference call and formed a business over the phone. We were all working full-time jobs at the time. So for me, it was just because of a conversation I had with the GoDaddy rep saying, do you know other, because I just couldn't do it on my own. I was out of CPU cycles per se to do that. And, you know, we made a lot of mistakes. And, you know, we think back to even the naming of the company. Why did we call it, the primary company's called Raw Voice, and then Blueberry Podcasting came later. And it's like, why did we call Blueberry Blueberry? It was because Raw Voice was called, our tagline was Fresh Organic Media. So, you know, it's just the weird things that develop on, you know, if we'd have been smart. And of course, at the time, if you remember, there was much controversy on whether or not stuff would remain, if the medium would still be called podcasting. Yeah. So yeah. I could have bought all those podcasting domains in the early days and we would have had the perfect name for a hosting company. But no, we launched with Blueberry, and, you know, you make your bed and, you know, so that's kind of what happened. So, you know, it just was often, I think back, it was just a little bit of luck, you know, it's and how this all developed. So it's been an interesting run for sure. But we're talking about me. We should be talking about you.
Well, I just never heard that story. I was very interested in what drove you. And it's that kind of that deadline of make money or get out. And you knew you weren't getting out.
Yeah.
So your only options to make money.
You know, and I'd had some stuff that were some money pits before. You know, you throw another $100 at it and it, you know, it's, you know, it looks pretty, but it's not making any money. So she was worried about me continuing to throw $100 bills at this thing. And
yeah.
Because at the time there was no Libsyn, there was no way to host your media. You did it on your own. You know, you had to figure out your own way, and you know, yep. it was an interesting time.
I think one of my most interesting, and along that storyline of this shouldn't work but it does, is in 2013 I got laid off, and we'd seen it coming, writing on the wall, and I'd been. You're working for the man as all my life, right? I'd been a paramedic in the ambulance and I left that. And I'm working in an office doing medical stuff and constantly doing my show and always working on something. But it is always a secondary. The show was secondary to making life work. And then in 2010, the company got bought out. I got to work from home for 3 years. And then I'd say I started building my empire. Then I really got serious about learning things from different clients and connecting with different people. And that's when I started going to New Media Expo and other conferences. And 2013 got laid off, and we had a golden parachute. So that was nice. And my wife said, why don't you make a run of it? And I just knew, I said, I need a business plan. I mean, I need not a plan. I need to know X, Y, Z will get me paid, and I can work towards that. I can't just shoot in a million different directions. And I was, on unemployment after the parachute ran out, and I was looking for jobs, and I spent some time working with some people, built up some stuff, but nothing that would fully pay the bills. And so I remember one day I'm playing this video game on Facebook. I mean, it's just a little Facebook game called Marvel Avengers Alliance, and I'm playing it, and I found myself in 8 hours of day, because my wife was out doing something with the kids, and I'm supposed to be finding jobs. I probably did more playing than finding jobs. Like, this is a dumb idea I had, Todd. This is before Patreon, before anything.
Sure.
Other than the Blueberry sponsors, or not Blueberry sponsors, but, you know, the ad buys and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
That was going on, but not the direct support. And I went, well, if I'm going to play this much, I better make a podcast and get paid for it. And you couldn't just do that.
Right.
And 40 episodes in, Patreon drops in about 5 episodes in is when I got Brian Abbott to sign on, and he and I did that show together for a couple of years, and that helped. That thing that helped carry it until Patreon dropped in, and the moment it dropped in, we jumped on board instantly, and we went from making nothing to $400 a month. And I was like, well, there you go. I just created money out of nothing.
And it's incrementally that type of stuff that helps out. And I think that oftentimes I'll tell podcasters, if you can make a car payment with your podcast, you're doing really well.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the way it still looks at. We're almost out of time here, Charles. Boy, we could probably talk for an hour. What, I guess from a better standpoint, we've talked about, you know, getting started in the early days, doing a number of shows. We've talked about your, you know, basically feedback you've got from audience. And then some of the opportunities that have came your way. what would be your advice to a podcaster that's looking, you know, maybe they're 10 episodes in, maybe they're 100. Do you have any advice for them?
There's probably 3 points of advice that got me through. The first one was, first, only listen to yourself and ignore everybody else. In the early days, I wanted quality over ease of use. And this is still in the dial-up days, right? So people were going, man, your file, and this is going to be ludicrous now, but your file is 80 megabytes. It's almost, it's 150 megabytes. It takes me an hour to download it. And my answer was, and don't listen, because I knew I wanted that stereo quality. I probably put too much quality, to be honest, but I was overcompensating for some of the stuff that was going on in podcasting then. And then it was, there's no way to make money. Don't put the cart before the horse. I just ignored everybody. I went live early on because I needed that interaction, that energy versus that controlled. My shows have never been polished. They've gotten better over the years. Don't get me wrong, but they've always had that rough edge to them, which I like because that's kind of who I am. So do who you are and ignore everybody else. My second piece of advice is listen to the advice of those who've gone before you, which kind of you would think contradicts level one, but it really doesn't. I still process the feedback that I would get from you and that I would get from Dave Jackson and other people, listeners even. Well, what's this about? Why are you so mean to your co-host? Those kind of things. And take it in. You process it with what your ultimate goal is. Always keep in mind on that end goal. If your goal is just to get famous in 10 episodes, 20 episodes, dude, I've been doing this for almost 15 years. I don't know if I could call myself famous. I mean, I know people, and there's people who know me, and I have a reputation in the industry. Thankfully, we can call it that. We couldn't call it 10 years ago. We couldn't call podcasting an industry, but now we can. But there's so many people who just don't know me, so I wouldn't say I'm famous. You can't bank on that. You got to do what you love. And there are people who will see that and who will advise you things that you think go against what you want. But you got to really have that big goal. And then the third thing is just help others be awesome. Once I really locked in on that and hear what can I do to help you, how can I be cool and do things with you? I mean, when I started and you started and Dave started, we were nobodies.
Nobody.
And I reached out. I think I kind of copied your style. Just, hey, I'm going to ask this guy to be on. And I just like Dave Jackson's style. And I had him on and we talked. And then there was a controversy that is neither here nor there. That was cleared up many, many, many years ago. But it was, hey, you're cool. I'm cool. Let's just talk for a minute. And then that was podcasting in the early days. And
yep.
I think it still can be. So just go and see where you can be awesome and help people. And you just never know what's going to come around that corner, because we had no idea what was coming that we had today. We had no idea what iTunes was going to be, and Stitcher wasn't a thing, and YouTube wasn't a thing. And Twitch wasn't there, and Patreon. And now there's this world.
Yeah. And what's it going to be in 10 years? That's the crazy part. So
I know.
Charles, how can they reach you? Where can they find you online?
The biggest, easiest way is my network, giantsizeteamup.com or gstu.net. You can find all my shows over there, charlesmcfall.com. And, I'm all over Facebook. Rock God of Podcasting. You Google that and you'll find it.
Hey, thank you for being on Podcast Insider. This has been a great time to walk down memory lane and get some insights on some of the stuff I didn't know you even did. But I do appreciate it, Charles. Thank you. I do want to thank Charles for being on Podcast Insider. Charles is a great guy, and he doesn't get as much credit as he deserves for the stuff he's done in podcasting over the years. So, Mike, let's move on to stuff in support. Let's talk about what's going on there.
Yeah, we don't have a ton to talk about and support today, but one of the things we've noticed a lot of lately is people will either email or put in a ticket, and they use an email that is not the email they use on their Blueberry account, which is fine, but it makes it harder for us to find your account quickly, and that delays the response and all that good stuff like that. So make sure when you contact us, if you're not using the email that you normally would use to log into Blueberry, at least mention that, or just log in and put in the ticket, and then we have all that information, you know, and we can click on your account, and it just makes it way faster. It cuts down the back and forth emails. You know, the first thing I have to ask somebody is, what's your account email at Blueberry, or what's the name of your show, or whatever. But give us something to identify your show, and we'll get to you a lot quicker, or at least we won't have as much back and forth. So nothing big earth-shattering about that. And this being the last episode of 2019, at least other than our special one next week, I just want to publicly call out the other support guys here, Sean and Dave. They're our rock stars, man. They take up the slack in the evenings and on the weekends, and Dave during the day when I'm doing one-on-ones and other things. And yeah, you guys take care of our customers. And, you know, it's a thankless job sometimes. I mean, man, people get, you know, they get passionate about their stuff, and we can understand that. But, yeah, you guys really, really do a good job. So I just wanted to publicly call those guys out.
You know, and of course, I want to thank the entire team, the entire Blueberry Podcasting team, for the work they've done this year. And you know, I was making a comment to someone I was talking to yesterday. He said, yeah, we go to events and, you know, Mike's there and you know, people walk up and I introduce myself. And they say, where's Mike? I want to talk to Mike. They don't want to talk to me. They want to talk to you. So it just is a testament to the support team. And basically, I always say here on Blueberry Podcasting that our podcasters can pick up the phone and call a friend and call for help. And that's what we're here for. We're the only company in the space that offers phone support. And, of course, you know, Mike and Dave are busy. So if you do call and you don't get them directly, leave a message. And they'll call you back, or definitely schedule a time. And they can schedule a specific time to do a call with you and get through your problems. But this is a part of our ongoing commitment to you as a podcaster and part of the business we do here. And I should mention too that if you are still looking to a one-on-one consult, I am still doing those. I'll be getting those started up in earnest after the new year again. And this is available to any Blueberry Podcast hosting customer, and where I do a 30-minute, we just do a chit chat. What are you having challenges with? Give you some advice. So it's kind of like a free consult. We talk a little bit about even what we're doing here and what you think we can do to improve. But just finished a meeting with Angelo. We're planning out the dashboard UI UX revitalization plan. It's a big job. You know, it's big job to go in and completely gut and rebuild the UI UX over the next 3 to 6 months. Major changes afoot and, you know, really trying to make it easier for podcasters, simplifying things to a great extent, and we look forward to be able to bring the new dashboard to you over time. Lots of stuff coming with PowerPress too. PowerPress 8.1 release coming, and two more releases in rapid order. And I think by the end of January, early February, we will be done with the UI UX work. And some big major changes in the episode box will be coming right after the new year. So I'm sure we'll be talking about that a lot.
Yeah, and the other thing, you know, with one-on-ones, Todd's doing the little, you know, 30-minute chats. But if you have a technical challenge and you're a Blueberry customer, reach out to me. I'm doing a lot more one-on-one screen sharing, you know, helping people out, you know. And if you just want to check out, make sure that you're doing things technically the right way, you know, I'd be happy to jump on there for a half an hour and go through what you're doing technically, you know, more on the tech side. I'm not much of a strategy guy, that's Todd. But anyway, so feel free to reach out to me about that as well.
And I should mention too that if you want to beta test what we have coming with PowerPress 8.2, we're going to have a beta almost immediately available. So please send us an email. Let us know you want to be on the beta list, and we'll get you basic access to those early beta tests of 8.2. And again, if you have a little technical skills and want to shape the way PowerPress goes, this is the best way to provide feedback before we do a general release and then maybe see something you don't like. So, or you do love and you're not surprised about. But anyway, lots of changes coming here, folks. Lots of improvements to our complete UI system and long overdue. And I'm excited to see it all come to fruition. But this is it for us for today, Podcast Insider. Everyone have a happy holidays and a happy new year as well. But we'll have that special edition for you next week. And while the rest of the team is vacationing, we still will be kind of monitoring stuff here. Don't worry, we're not going away completely, but there will be less availability and hours, and that'll be in the show notes today. So everyone take care. We'll see you next time here on the Podcast Insider.
Everybody have a happy holidays.